para la construcción de una democracia participativa, ¿no? Así que quizá el gran cambio de discurso es ya no solamente no nos ataquen, sino el Estado tiene una obligación fundamental en garantizar el derecho a la comunicación.
Aunque en algunos países haya mejorado las condiciones de los medios sociales, la persecución a algunos de estos sigue produciéndose.
El panorama, especialmente en algunos países de Centroamérica, e insisto, Honduras es el que más nos preocupa a todos, donde la situación es gravísima de hostigamiento y de amenaza y de muerte a comunicadores populares, pero Guatemala también está viviendo una situación durísima, El Salvador, aunque han mejorado las cosas, sigue habiendo problemas con las megaempresas. Así que el análisis no es optimista, no creemos tener en nuestras manos medidas realmente poderosas para la protección de estos medios, pero sí al menos fortalecer la autoprotección y al menos que entre nosotros sí podamos ayudarnos y sí podamos visibilizar las amenazas y si podamos prender las alertas. Pero no te voy a engañar, corren malos tiempos para la comunicación popular en Centroamérica y parte de la alerta es esa, ¿no? Es un toque de atención porque falta oxígeno, falta espacio y faltan recursos. Así que no va a ser fácil, vamos a seguir trabajando todos y todas, pero no va a ser fácil.
En Estados Unidos, esta semana, 12 migrantes se declararon culpables de desorden público y destrucción de vías ante una corte de Alabama y pagaron una multa de $300 cada uno, esto como parte de una estrategia para continuar las protestas contra la ley antimigrante HB56. Mike Winter es presidente de la Asociación de Abogados del Condado de Montgomery, vicepresidente de la Asociación de Abogados de Defensa en Criminología de Alabama y defensor pro bono de los migrantes.
HB56 is a devil's brew of every un-American immoral.
Él dice que la HB56 es un cóctel diabólico compuesto de todo lo antiamericano, inmoral e inconstitucional que pudieron incluir en una propuesta de ley.
It's completely counterproductive. The whole point of it is to say that...
Añade que la medida es totalmente contraproductiva y quiere enviar el mensaje de que hoy día se vive una situación económica difícil que busca como blanco un grupo social que no es muy grande para poder atacarlo, pero lo suficientemente significante como para asustar a la gente con ellos y echarle la culpa de todo lo que está mal ahora.
Right now, this is damaging the lives of a lot of innocent, undocumented Americans who just want to...
La implementación de partes de la ley, dice, está causando mucho daño a migrantes que solo buscan un empleo y ayudar a fortalecer el país, pero también está dañando la vida de los ciudadanos que tienen empleos disponibles, pero que nadie los toma. Además, se están perdiendo millones de dólares en los campos agrícolas porque las cosechas están pudriendo sin que nadie haga la recolección necesaria. El abogado defensor de los migrantes señala que dos grandes corporaciones que planeaban construir dos plantas en Alabama se han ido a otro lugar por culpa de esa maldita ley. También la implementación de la medida ha causado el arresto de altos oficiales de las empresas Mercedes-Benz y Honda.
If HB56 is fully implemented, it will cost the people of Alabama billions of dollars.
Winter dice que si todos los aspectos y componentes de la ley son puestos en práctica en Alabama, en los próximos 10 años costará al Estado miles de millones de dólares en pérdidas de ingresos, empleos y en desarrollo.
In Alabama, you know, there have always been people on the wrong side of history, but there have also always been people...
El abogado admite que Alabama está ubicado en el sur, donde se practicó la esclavitud y donde se cometieron un sinfín de abusos contra la gente de color. Pero no olvida que desde siglos han habido personas que toman la posición correcta y condenan los abusos y defienden a las víctimas. Él mismo, dice Winter, a los 7 años de edad ya escribía cartas al periódico local y hacía campaña de puerta en puerta contra los prejuicios y el racismo. El veterano defensor de los pobres concluye diciendo que se ha lanzado un reto a la ley en las cortes y algunas de sus cláusulas han sido congeladas temporalmente, aunque la mayoría de ellas se están aplicando ahora. En una audiencia en la Corte de Apelaciones en Atlanta esta semana se discute si estas continúan. En todo caso, dice, la parte que pierda en las cortes apelará y sin duda el caso pasará después a la Corte Suprema.
El coraje, la rebeldía, cualidades volitivas mías, tal como lo suponían, después de un buen aprendizaje, notas se sobresalen como aguas de manantiales, surgen, fluyen...
En España continúan las protestas contra las medidas de austeridad aplicadas por el gobierno pro-estadounidense en Madrid. Rafael Cuesta, coordinador del colectivo radial Más Voces, amplía la información.
En el Estado español, en una jornada a nivel estatal, miles de universitarios y estudiantes de secundaria salieron a las calles contra los recortes de los gobiernos regionales y en solidaridad con los estudiantes valencianos, con quien la policía se ensañó en las cargas policiales de la semana pasada. La protesta se sumaba a las que se celebraron en cerca de 40 localidades que participan en los paros, concentraciones y manifestaciones convocadas por el Sindicato de Estudiantes y por la Plataforma Unitaria en Defensa de la Educación Pública. Xavier Domènech es precisamente portavoz de la plataforma en Barcelona.
Nuestras instituciones dicen que nada de esto está pasando, que con menos se puede hacer más. Si hace falta que vuelvan las aulas universitarias para descubrir que con menos se hace menos, que vuelvan, pero que dejen de mentir.
En Barcelona, la policía catalana, los Mossos de Escuadra, efectuaron nuevas cargas policiales y detuvieron al menos a dos personas tras la quema de algunos contenedores y el lanzamiento de objetos contra una sucursal bancaria. Algunos medios de comunicación conseguían así el titular que buscaban para tachar de violentas las protestas, cuando en realidad fueron esos actos cometidos por personas aisladas. Marc de Camp pertenece a la Asamblea de Estudiantes de Valencia.
El gobierno de la Comunidad Valenciana está yendo en un sitio hacia la desigualdad, hacia la injusticia social que no representa a la sociedad.
Mientras en Madrid, y gritando lemas como "somos estudiantes, no delincuentes", miles de estudiantes de secundaria y de universidades se han manifestado por el centro de Madrid para mostrar su solidaridad con los estudiantes valencianos. Toil Delgado pertenece al Sindicato de Estudiantes.
Los estudiantes valencianos no están solos. Nos hemos sentido agredidos y golpeados, miles de jóvenes en todo el estado, porque la situación de recortes en la escuela pública es la misma en Valencia, en Madrid, en Barcelona o en Murcia.
Con la llegada del Partido Popular al gobierno del estado y a la mayoría de comunidades autónomas, los recortes sociales y las privatizaciones de los servicios públicos se están convirtiendo en una realidad que amenaza el denominado estado del bienestar. Muchos se preguntan si estamos ante el derrumbe político y legislativo del derecho a la educación, convertida en servicio privatizado y entregado al mercado. El programa El Candelero, de Radio Vallecas, de Madrid, nos ofrece Julio Rojero, del Movimiento de Renovación Pedagógica.
Ellos tienen muy claro lo que tienen que hacer, porque ya lo están experimentando en distintas comunidades autónomas, que ya han utilizado de punta de lanza en esas políticas neoliberales. En este momento, lo único que tienen que hacer en su propuesta de reforma educativa es profundizar esas políticas que ya están poniendo en marcha. Eso no quiere decir que no haya un margen de acción por parte de los que entendemos que las cosas no deben ir por ahí. Lo hay, y de hecho en este momento comienza, sobre todo desde el mes de julio, comienza a haber una fuerte contestación a estas políticas. Otra cosa es que veamos hasta dónde pueden llegar nuestras fuerzas y podamos responder a esas brutales políticas neoliberales que llevan ya bastantes años y que se van a profundizar ahora, destruyendo el derecho a la educación y destruyendo la escuela de titularidad pública, que es el espacio propicio donde se puede dar respuesta a este derecho a la educación. Este año va a haber 485 millones de euros menos para educación. Eso se traduce en miles de profesores menos, aumento de las ratios, menos recursos, menos apoyos, porque en definitiva lo que pretenden es afianzar el modelo educativo que ellos defienden que es el modelo dominante actualmente. Lo que quieren afianzar es ese modelo educativo que refuerza los elementos más conservadores ya presentes en el sistema educativo actual, como es la libertad de elección de centros, como es el instruccionismo academicista, como es la cultura del esfuerzo, la autoridad.
Este reporte fue preparado por Rafael Cuesta, coordinador del colectivo radial Más Voces, con sede en Madrid. Y así concluye esta edición del informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez y del resto de nuestro equipo de producción, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
This is Augusto Cesar Sandino II. Just reminded you to tune in to the Global Local program every Monday night from more or less 6 to 9 p.m. and occasionally beyond. Bringing you revolutionary news and views and analysis sometimes, but always bringing you the kick-ass music you won't hear anywhere else. Every Monday night, 6 to 9, with your DJ, Augusto Cesar Sandino. Check it out.
And don't forget to tune in, too, to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. That's easy to do because it's coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Going to be 2 hours of the show with you tonight. I'll be here, and I may be alone, but I'll have lots of voices with me, perhaps yours. Call-in number here is 831-427-3772. And what's going on right now is the Tent University and the General Strike Occupy Education happening up at UCSC and elsewhere around the state. I went up there quickly to drop off some flyers to the Occupy Santa Cruz folks and the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom people, and we'll be playing some of their, I barely had a chance to get a comment or two because the road was blocked. There was no place to park. You had to walk in to deal with the situation, which is as it may be, or as it was, but it didn't provide much time for a man dashing to the studio. So I guess you're going to hear what I got. Plus, tonight we're going to have Catherine Byers, the interview, which I did, it was, I guess, a week ago now, last Friday. And that may be of interest to some. Catherine Byers, of course, is a council member, former mayor, and an observer inside the building at 75 River Street during the occupation. She, like others, myself included, wasn't aware that there was any kind of crime by being inside a building that seemed to be open with police allowing folks to come and go. And we'll hear what she has to say about that, although there are a lot of other topics that are ducked by Catherine Byers, and just kind of as a follow-up, the same day, actually, that I did the Byers interview, I also did the interview with the mayor and council member Don Lane, who's, I played that interview on Sunday, so you can catch these interviews archived in case you miss them. Unfortunately, it's sometimes a little hard to figure out where they are. But Lane's interview was last Sunday. If you go to the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website, huffsantacruz.org, you can, if you want to bother, listen to the words of the mayor and, of course, some of my pungent commentary, which I am proud to say is less intrusive than usual. So that's good. Let's hear a little musica, and then we'll get into the substance of things.
On the side of a hill in a land called somewhere, a little boy lies asleep in the earth, while down in the valley a cruel war rages, and people forget what a child's life is worth. On the side of a hill, a little cloud weeps and waters the grave with its silent tears, while a soldier cleans and polishes a gun that ended a life at the age of 7 years. and the war rages on in a land called somewhere. And generals order their men to kill and to fight for a cause they've long ago forgotten, while a little cloud weeps on the side of a hill.
Yeah, and that was a Paul Simon tune. An anti-war tune, in fact, as you probably have gathered by this time. So, I'm going to begin with what's happening right now, also encouraging people to call in with updates from the Hill and from the Tent University and the gathering and the general strike that's happening on campus and involving protest against the educational cuts that are happening up there. The description of it on Indy Bay states that at 5:30 there is a second rally, and I actually walked into that second rally. The UCSC General Assembly voted on January 9th to go on strike as part of a statewide day of action for public education, and there's going to be, I think, a General Assembly with Occupy Santa Cruz folks talking. I think it's at 6:20, if I'm not mistaken. That's what I think I heard from... read in an email. Let me see if I can review that email to be sure. Where is it? Here, this might be it. Taking a look. According to Casey Livengood, who's an activist with both Occupy Santa Cruz and Huff, there's going to be a homelessness workshop from 7 to 8 tonight at a location near the base of campus, although I'm not sure. He hasn't been heard from all day, so he might have disappeared into the crowd or fled the jurisdiction or something. That's kind of a joke, though some of us are under false indictment by the district attorney for reporting on and being present around an occupation, a peaceful occupation of a vacant bank property down on River Street. Casey is not, as far as I know, so he should be in pretty good shape until they start indicting other people. We have a caller here. Hi there, you're on Free Radio with Robert. Hello?
Sorry, wrong number.
Okie doke. My goodness. A laugh and a wrong number. What a way to start the show. But anyway, let's... I don't have the exact time of this... Occupy Santa Cruz speaking at the General Assembly up on campus, but there's places to park a block or two away from the campus. There's a couple hundred people up there at least that I saw. There was a poetry reading going on. In fact, I think I'll just play a bit of it, and then we'll continue.
And I'm walking up Bay Street, which has been blocked off a block back from the campus, requiring us to huff and puff our way to campus with not much time to spare. And there are a number of tents and domes at the base of campus where the lights are blinking red lights. I can hear some kind of broadcast activity going on. No business as usual, reads one of the signs. There's a news van over to the right. And students have turned the entrance roadway into sort of a pedestrian area. Again, as you can hear, someone is making a passionate speech. Shut down the nightmare, create dreams, is what one of the banners says. The sun has come out after a rainy day, and we have, you can hear it, well, it looks like the number of people can't be over 100 or two here, maybe 200, maybe, I'm guessing, at this entrance.
say last chance on the board. Because we are the children they're trying to leave behind. Behind this line. This loathsome line of ignorance and stipulation. In the cesspool swimming in disinformation. Unspoken words churned over in my mind. Aching for vocalization. A voice in this oppressive nation. And no more double meaning exclamation.
So, we're talking with Dennis. Dennis, you're here for quite a while, or?
I've only been here for a few short hours, but it's really a great turnout. Of course, all our old familiar friends, Zach Friend from the police department, Santa Cruz PD, University Police, have been rolling by slowly, taking pictures, not just of the event of what's going on, but they're noting the presence of Occupy Santa Cruz here.
Well, I know there's a general assembly about to happen soon. There's Tony Madrigal walking around in a business suit. Has anybody got a tomato that I might...
Over in the food tent, they're serving tomatoes, and I might beat you to the punch on that.
If you go quickly, he's approaching right past the stop sign right there.
Yeah.
Right there. See him with the business suit?
Yeah.
There you go. So, what have you noticed today regarding either the event, the police, anything you learned?
It was interesting. I overheard the conversation over the quote-unquote news report that Fox News was giving out, and she did note in her report over the air that there was an occupied Santa Cruz presence, and there yet to, it remains to be seen of what's going to take place tonight. Could this possibly be an occupied Santa Cruz reoccupation?
That would be nice.
Yes, it would be.
However unlikely, but I...
Yeah. So I kind of antagonized on my... As she was loading up her gear in the van, I walked up to her and I looked at her and I said, you never know what's going to happen.
You're here. We've been talking with...
Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis.
And Dennis, of course, is an activist who spent a lot of time in the campground. He's facilitated a number of Occupy Santa Cruz General Assemblies. And he's also looking for a place where he and his partner Erica can park their van. They are kind of, again, like many people, I'm finding increasingly, are in a desperate living situation. If anybody has a piece of property that they're willing to let them park on, please give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's what they need, and that's what I've been asked to put out. So, again, 423-HUFF, if you want to let them park a van for a limited period of time. Again, back to Occupy Santa Cruz. There's some Occupy Santa Cruz's up there, but it's mostly we're talking about the Tent University and a quick interview or two up there right before the show.
So California is not broke. We have the 8th largest economy in the world, says one sign over the Coolidge stop, the bus stop. And there are small clumps of students in different places, groups of 5 and 10 folks.
No, Lawrence Ferlinghetti right here.
Doing different stuff. Some people, some people are critical of the poetry reading. You have a poem of your own, perhaps?
Yeah.
Go for it.
I'm talking about butterscotch penny whistles, pink flamingos, and sending missiles. I'm a top-notch blockbuster from the bottom of the beatnik, baby. We're talking about city lights, specs. At 11 o'clock on Tuesday, who's around? Nobody. What color are my shoelaces? Look at the corner. The humming of the lights you can't even hear. You've heard them so long. Sometimes seeing takes away from hearing. The limitations of the cognitive processing. Enter the database. It's Dr. Octagon, Dr. Data. Enter the atmosphere here, guys. Heavy duty. Big time. Old time.
And we have to leave it there. We've been talking with or listening to.
Well, unfortunately, you've got a single input microphone here. Unfortunately, the stereo dynamic field.
Your name, sir?
I'm Clem Cadiddlehopper here.
And Clem, is this yours or are you reciting somebody else's work?
This is some heavy-duty blockbuster stuff improvised here.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, and you should be on free radio in about half an hour.
Awesome.
Thank you, man.
This is Dr. Data.
Thank you, DD.
And that was all I had time for as I dashed to the studio. And now, unfortunately, perhaps to spoil the poetry, here is an interview with one of our politicians, Catherine Byers, who spoke with me in Joe's Pizza, where we sat around drinking coffee and, well, you can hear chatting. I will allow these interviews to run for at least 10 minutes before interjecting my pungent commentary, as I put it. If you want to call in and you have any thoughts, you can, 427-3772. Best to wait until the 10-minute interval and make your comments then. But, you know, if you can't control yourself, call in when you need to and say what you need to say. Here we go. This, again, is an interview held last Friday, February 24th, I think it was.
I'm here with Catherine Byers, a councilwoman, former mayor, champion runner, aging activist. What else are you, Catherine?
My mouth is full. Sorry.
And a chewer at this at Joe's Pizza. We're both kind of hanging out here at 15 after 12 on February 24th. And you're having a very tasty-looking macaroon there, which was donated, actually, full disclosure, by your interviewer here.
You did. Thank you very much, Robert. It's very good.
And donated, or actually sold by the Pacific Cookie Company. So, Catherine, you've been on the council this time since 2008.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And before that, you served a number of terms. You were appointed in 89. You served until 96. You were reelected until 2000. And then you took a vacation where you became a champion runner and apparently expanded the age. More people who are old, over 70, even over 75, are still running, right?
Correct. There's quite a few. A lot of 70-year-olds and more 75.
But the real question, of course, is are you running for office next time?
You know, I think I am. I'm looking towards it. I plan on it. I've sort of told my inner self that May 1st is my drop-down date. That's the date I absolutely get on board. But right now, I'm saying yes.
That's also International Working Persons Day.
That's what I thought when I told people May 1st.
You can always drop out and join the working class.
I've been part of the working class.
Around that, how would you describe your work over the years? What have you been most active in doing?
You mean these last 4 years?
Last 60 years.
I'm very proud of all the work I'm doing at the Homeless Resource
Librarian
Center.
Librarian up at UCSC?
I was a librarian for 25 years. Proud of that. It was a good career, good job. I love working up there. It's like a national park. But now, since then, my work on the Homeless Resource Center, the Homeless Service Center, used to be homeless work, you know, and the Homeless Garden, all those I'm still active in. I care a lot. I work hard. I raise money. And I'm also now on the Land Trust, the Board of Directors of the Land Trust, which the big news lately, you know, is the Semex property. These organizations have bought 9,000 acres, which we turned into.
You'll be setting up a homeless campground, will you?
Wouldn't that be something?
Which, of course, brings us back to the old issue that I brought up probably the first term you arrived as Mo Reisch was ushered out the door in 1989 for a nasty, I guess, Valentine's Day card to the poor mayor of Scotts Valley. There was a progressive majority elected in 1988. They always call themselves progressives all the time. But on the homeless issue, the only time we ever had a progressive majority was really in 1998, or a near majority. And I think you were telling me that you, as mayor in that year, thought you almost had the votes to at least significantly modify the sleeping and blanket ban.
I think there probably was. It's a long time to think back, and so much has gone on. That is when we did work a couple things. We did, if I can recall. One was if the shelters are full, cancel a ticket.
Only for the armory, winter shelter, only during the winter.
That got all muddy, but there was an attempt there, and it helped a little bit. But the other one was reducing the fines, which were in the $200, and we got them down to $55.
They've risen again to $150 now.
They've probably completely gone up. I thought of that when I was driving here to meet you. So, you know, I think we tried to tweak some things with it that I felt good about. There was one other major thing. Oh, and build more shelter. I mean, that's still our goal. Still the goal is to get another shelter that will house single men and women. You know, we have the family shelter. But we need overnight shelter and not the Army. I mean, similar to the Army, but not the Army, so year-round.
I was lambasting Don, or at least critiquing him. I call it the homeless lack of services shelter, essentially, because they don't really meet the basic need, which is... Go ahead. She's not embarrassed. She's just chewing her food, folks. They don't meet the basic need in the sense that if they spent the same amount of money establishing campgrounds, they could actually serve a majority of the homeless community, but choose not to do so or to advocate for that position. Instead, we have this piecemeal, not quite token. It's more than token. Don pointed out you have several hundred people receiving either program shelter, halfway shelter, family shelter, 1 month shelter after two weeks to 6 weeks on the waiting list in the Pauley lot. You do have some shelter, essentially for less than 10% of the homeless community.
I agree the numbers aren't enormous, but I do disagree that it's token. Because I
took that back.
Okay, because where I've come from all these years, it is the goal is to take that person, whatever that person is, and try to get them into housing and then work on the other issues with that person. It's not just dumping them at the Pauley or the family shelter. You work with them. Get them jobs. Give them permanent housing. Get them health benefits. Get them VA benefits. So I think we take a whole person and work. Now, some don't, we never see them again but I think, and I've learned that and I care a lot about that, and that's what I'm working on. Granted, it's not near the numbers that we'd like to do.
But the issue is really, it's not so much as not just near the numbers. The immediate concern is emergency shelter at night, particularly in a town that makes it illegal to sleep or cover up with blankets. Admittedly, the police are not arresting even a fraction of the people that are doing this. They couldn't possibly do so. But people live in danger. They live in anxiety. They can't sleep, which is in and of itself a health problem, as you know. And so the idea that, we're working very hard and we've done more, we've established a family shelter, all this money and all this energy that is working to essentially benefit a few, not a token, but a few, a relative few number of homeless people, is not addressing the major issue, which for every night is sleeping, really, primarily. If people can get a good night's sleep somewhere, as we found, for example, although actually I have no stats, at the campground that was established at San Lorenzo Park, which I'm going to ask you about next, people could establish that, and they could then go out and look for work. They could then, get some kind of... They were out of people's hair during the day. I would claim, and I have no evidence for this, that there was a drop in the crime rate. In Oakland, there was a drop in the crime rate after when Occupy Oakland had a campground. That's been verified, or at least claimed recently in the papers. So it's ironic that some would say, look at all that drugs and, bicycle theft and, camping illegally in this campground. But in fact, because these things happen anywhere elsewhere in the city, when people are together and kind of finding a common purpose to some extent, at least for some of them, it was more meaningful. And let me turn to that and ask you about that. What was your reaction to the San Lorenzo campground next to Occupy Santa Cruz, really, which was so harshly dispersed and destroyed by Chief Vogel's police force on December 8th?
I walked through it several times. In fact, I just made a point to walk through it. Start one end, walk through, talk to people, saw some things they were doing that were right, and I'd tell them that.
What was their reaction to that?
Oh, they were just rude. Totally rude.
Fuck you, lady.
They were rude. I can't remember what your question was.
Just your reaction to the campground, and also your reaction...
I just saw it deteriorate. It was upsetting, because I so respected Occupy, and then it just took on this other side of it. As you said earlier in our conversation, subgroups started joining.
What sort of things did you see that you found discouraging and that people just told you to fuck off about?
Well, I just, everywhere from Spokane Division to just trashing the land, trashing the garbage and defecating. I saw people just do it in daylight. It wasn't like at midnight.
You saw someone taking a dump?
Yeah.
Was that before or after the porta potty was open? Because the city
porta potty was out on the street,
right.
But I think you have a key. And I fought to get the bathroom open, and of course didn't get anywhere with that. But
how long did that take?
I fought to get the parks to open the bathroom and keep it open all night.
What reasons did they give you that they didn't want to do that?
I just argued and argued it, and I said, well, let's allocate more money so they can clean it once an hour, whatever it takes. But I just lost the battle. I had no support. When a council person wants something, you know, forget it. Yeah.
Still good that you did the bathroom?
I did. I tried my hardest to get those bathrooms left open 24 hours
a day. I knew
that
you never made any public statements about that.
I guess I was never asked.
Yeah.
No?
I'm glad that we know that now. So, yeah, there were. The city also blocked porta potties going into the area for quite a time. Don Lane insisted when I talked to him. Yeah, we tried to put in porta potties on the property.
Oh, and I see. Yeah,
they wouldn't allow that to happen until. And this, Don Lane claimed today that it was because Occupy Santa Cruz was so slow. And it wasn't the city's fault. Do you have any sense of what went on?
John worked closely on that. I didn't at all. I know nothing about it.
What did you think about the attempt to demand a permit for Occupy Santa Cruz and the way the city did, which is sort of vacate by mid-November, get a permit, and then taking it to court with an injunction demand? Were you supportive of that?
I don't know that I was one way or the other about it. I understood what the city was doing. It wasn't the place to do it. It was unfortunate. It really was.
Would you say you then supported the elimination of the campground by police force on December 8th?
We weren't asked. The police just, you know, they have their laws and their rules, and we don't direct the police to do anything. You know, hardly could.
I'm not saying you directed them. I was saying, did you support them?
Did I support them in removing?
Right on. Did you say, huh? Did you say, whoa?
I just have to go back a bit because I think people, at least I understood from our city manager that there was a lot of warnings out there when the deadline was, get your stuff out of here and move on. And then a lot of people, and I understand a lot of people did take that and did move.
Move on to where, though? I mean, you know. There was no alternatives given.
I know the alternatives. I say that all the time.
So why say then that they were given a lot of warnings? Your warning is to go to move to nowhere.
Stuff was going to be taken. You know, it was an opportunity. It was just, yes, it was an opportunity that if they didn't want to have a big hassle, just get out of there. And I know there was no
many people did.
And many people did, I was told. Many people did.
But that doesn't really answer my question. Did you feel, it sounds like you're saying you're kind of obliquely responding, but did you think when it was cleared, well, it had to be done because of all the bad things I saw, or God, I don't think it was a good idea for them to do it yet because there was not adequate shelter for them somewhere else, or why the hell did they do that? The community is operating perhaps imperfectly and with a lot of problems, but we're working with it and trying to resolve it. Which of those is closest?
I think any of those. We certainly weren't working with anyone to try to resolve it. I didn't feel
that.
I think Don was. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Don certainly was. I had come up with an idea of a kind of a negotiating team of city people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not council people, but people who are good at negotiating, good at making things, mediating, whatever. But
what happened to that team?
I see on that one.
They didn't want to join together in the team, or you needed to have other people?
Martine and I said, when it first began, I just said, one idea I have is a negotiating team from the city, maybe from different departments who you know, not because of their job, but they're just good at what they do, which would be mediate, negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple ideas in mind, but it never happened. And I think it would have helped.
Did Martine reject the idea?
You can say, here's an idea I have, and then that was the end of that. I don't know whether it would have helped at all, but that was early on, right at the beginning.
Again, interesting information, but again, you really haven't answered my question, which is, you saw the December 8th, everybody cleared away, essentially truck after truck of tents destroyed and other properties, some of it garbage for sure, taken to the landfills. And when I went to the police department, they had only 3 pages worth of items of that entire campground, but much of it was taken away by homeless people themselves, of course. What was your reaction to that when it had happened?
I knew they were going to do it because that was publicized. I certainly knew they were going, and I didn't think one thing, one way or the other. I knew it was happening. I knew if they didn't pick up their own stuff, it was going to be confiscated or taken, whatever you want to call.
No horror, no, hold it, why can you do this to these people because they have no place to go? I'm a homeless worker for 20 years.
No, no.
Oh, you house privileged white woman, you.
I am.
And so am I.
I know that. I think of that.
Not a white woman, though.
You know, and I just, the other day, something was kind of not occupy that, but wherever I was, and someone was complaining about people camping in the bushes, and I just stood up, and I can't remember where it was, but I said, around 4:30 every day, probably about 1,500 people have to go find a place to hide so they can get some sleep. So, you know, I said, so just remember that. Starting at the end of the day, people are out there trying to find a place to sleep. I totally understand. I totally get it. And I want to get a year-round shelter.
And that's Catherine Byers, councilwoman, former mayor, talking to me a week ago. No, she doesn't get it at all, obviously. She gets the rhetoric. She gets the liberal impulse. But obviously, when homeless people have found and established a campground in a way that the city could not, and she has no alternative for them, she acknowledges, quite candidly, that she feels absolutely nothing when the campground is cleared except, well, they've been warned. They can always take their stuff and get out. And go somewhere else, even though there is nowhere else. In fact, what she said, one of her famous quotes that activist Becky Johnson put into a flyer about 11 years ago, 12 years ago, actually, maybe even 13 years ago, when Byers was essentially killing the proposal to end the sleeping ban when she was mayor, there's just no place for them. You know, with the same, a very sympathetic, tisking attitude, which is not hypocritical as much as, I believe, a kind of ideological blinkered situation where there's some fundamental blind spots. I mean, or it's just maybe the attitude itself presupposes the necessity of making yourself blind, because if you don't, then you have to take positions that are fundamentally go to the root of things. They're radical, involve real change, and won't get you reelected, won't be something that your colleagues will vote for, won't be something that you can pass at the next Democratic Party caucus or whatever. I don't know if Catherine runs the Democratic Party or anything. A couple other thoughts I had quickly, and again, I want to make this her opportunity, or your opportunity to hear her. She talks about, you know, building a shelter with a goal of housing people and helping them get out of homelessness. Yeah, this is a way where you're treating the homeless people as these sort of dysfunctional, disturbed individuals rather than as displaced urban residents who essentially, first of all, need a place to sleep and live, and secondly, they need the opportunity to engage in meaningful work. Although I notice that even in my own questioning, I kind of get stuck in the dominant ideology, which is, well, if you can put them somewhere where they're not bothering people, and then they can go out and get, you know, drone-like jobs, as though that's some sort of answer to anything. Instead of saying, here's people as human beings have a right to form a community, to have a place somewhere, to be able to have the minimum, at least, essentials of human dignity and basic sanitation, health, and welfare, and who are finding it with themselves, and who are being intentionally dispersed and disrupted. And there's a kind of a sinister side to this, because the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which Catherine Byers, Councilmember Byers, and Mayor Don Lane have both been on the board of directors for the last 20 years, on and off, has taken a stance under Executive Director Monica Martinez that essentially penalizes people who do not join up with the Homeless Lack of Services Center, even though by joining up it means going in, signing up on their waiting list, coming back, signing up on their waiting list again. Okay, you can get meals there twice a day, and I don't think you actually need to sign up to get meals, but maybe I'm wrong about that too. And you have to pay to use their mailboxes. All the lockers have been taken out. You're not allowed to be on the property, which they so stylishly call the campus, though it's as far from a college campus as you might imagine. It's a way, in essence, of sort of pumping up this, creating a lot of forced clients for the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which is really quite contemptible. And it's even more contemptible when you look at how persistent has been the determination of Monica Martinez, executive director, and her backers, Catherine Byers. Although I didn't ask her about Monica Martinez, she's been on the board for a couple years. She knows this is, that Martinez has been refusing to write letters of people who are getting camping tickets and trying to come back to the Homeless Services Center for evidence that the center was full, that the shelters were full, which they were. She's the refusal of Martinez to provide receipts indicating that people are on the waiting list, that cops will back off. A refusal of Martinez to even respond to the proposal that there should be a campus employee who's there anyway, who tells a police officer calling in, there's no shelter here, which would, in fact, ultimately make police liable for harassing the homeless with these kinds of tickets. if the Jones settlement is any ultimate precedent or helps to build another lawsuit. It's not a real precedent. The Jones case was the case in Los Angeles that overturned their sleeping ban. Other things about this, thoughts I had on the buyers discussion. The things, you know, Byers walks through and sees things that are not right, but she is utterly blind to what is really going on in the broader way, which is that people are providing shelter and company and a kind of community for each other. And one doesn't hear that from her. It's this sort of, as she acknowledges, and as I stated, this privileged upper middle class sort of prejudice, perhaps, or I'm not quite sure what it is. Good for her for advocating for bathrooms being open, but why didn't she do so publicly? You know, instead she did so privately, and then when we were advocating publicly, you know, she didn't. It might have been much more effective to go public, to have somebody who was on the city council actually amplify and reverberate the cry, the obvious cry, the sensible cry of the homeless campground and Occupy Santa Cruz for an open bathroom. We're talking about, of course, the Occupy Santa Cruz campground that happened between early October and early December. We have a caller. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Hey, it's Linda.
Hey, Linda.
I would like to say something, too, about what you're talking about.
Sure, go for it.
It seems to me that Catherine Byers and you too, Robert, are talking about the homeless population as if it was a one-size-fits-all set of people, that everybody has the same problems, and it's kind of depending on how willing they are to go along just the dependency system you were talking about. And it's not true. It does make sense to me that the services, the shelter system services that are available, most of them, the nonprofits and the little bit of county resources that end up supporting people that are homeless, that they would put those things out for the worst case, the chronic, the most crippled people. But that doesn't mean people should have to get crippled in order to get into that system, and it's very, very wrong for us to just slap over that, like homelessness is a euphemism. So no matter how you or Catherine and all the people in between justify pushing people through the Homeless Services Center and other resources like that, or pushing them out of the hospital prematurely because they found a cot that's open at night at the county shelter down there in Coral Cedar, which, you know, all of those things, it does not justify leaving other people who are more recently homeless or who are managing to keep their life, their job, their health together and are homeless into the dependency system. Now, I'm not saying that a case management approach, that's what they call some of them, wouldn't be supportive of anyone who becomes homeless for more than a month. Maybe it would.
Linda,
I'm saying that the resources we have does not and cannot ever justify treating everyone who's homeless like they're a
real Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, we don't have any disagreements. I'm not quite sure why you're attacking, at least, you're misstating completely what I said. My point is, I gave you a moment. Let me finish what my sentence, because you just had a minute and a half, okay? My position is that homeless people who get together in a campground should be allowed to do what they need to do, because one of the basic needs they have, although there are many different kinds of homeless people, as you point out, is to sleep, have a place to leave their property. I mean, you know all this, and you agree with all this, so I don't think we disagree.
I don't agree with you going along with someone like Catherine that thinks that going the only
along?
Homeless resources, apparently thinks from listening to what you played, are for people who have to sign up and wait in line.
You missed the point.
You're missing my point.
No,
criminalization.
Let's not fight here. This is embarrassing.
Help.
We don't want to fight on the air.
Let me say this.
Go ahead.
Criminalization is not the alternative to helping people.
You know, as I said, I think you misunderstand my position. I am not supporting Catherine Byers' position at, you know, in terms of... I am constantly a critic of the homeless lack of services centers, lack of services.
I don't care about that.
And you're getting a little excited here, but maybe that's because it's a passionate subject for you.
I'm not going to say what I called for.
Well, you have been saying what you've been calling for the last few minutes.
No,
but, you know,
cut me off just before the conclusion, and I tried to say it two more times, and you drowned it out on purpose.
I'm going to give you an opportunity to give your conclusion is that you're misstating my position and my view. But go ahead, give your conclusion. Go ahead, give your conclusion.
I didn't put any position to you.
Of course you did.
I'm saying people are skipping over something.
No, you said me and Catherine Byers both. You did impute a position to me.
I said everyone in between you and Catherine in this dialogue.
Anyway, go ahead. What's your conclusion, Linda?
Criminalization of the status of being homeless cannot be allowed in the public in this town to be the only alternative to going to these programs and getting help. Because it sets people up to be under a train wreck.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know why you're telling me this so passionately, because you know it's a position I've long agreed with, been arrested for, went into court recently with a bathrobe on for, and am facing, you know, two felonies for eventually. So I don't know quite what it is that you're upset with me about. I mean, I think we both agree.
I'm upset with you.
Good. You sound upset.
I'm trying to mention this elephant that everyone's going around.
Well,
everyone's used to thinking of the stereotype that people who are bigoted against homeless people put out, and it's not the case.
Yeah, but Linda, you're on a show that constantly states that position. I mean, it's not like this is something new you just brought up. This is something that essentially this show, you know, every hour that it's on, we repeat specifics and generalities, both, about this issue. Well, you hope so. You know so. You've been on the show before, you know.
I just listened to you about 45 minutes, and it wasn't stated, and it should have been. And it should have been stated more than once.
Well, you actually listened to 15. You listened to 15 minutes of Byers, because that's all we played for so far.
Yeah, but I've been listening to your show. Oh. What I'm trying to say, I guess it's not that important to people, because they're not ready to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, then. You had a
conclusion. People shouldn't be punished because they're not broken down enough to qualify for services.
You know, I agree.
Uncriminalizing homeless people doesn't require creating another shelter for a certain subset of the population. It requires admitting to ourselves that some homeless people can stand on their own 2 feet. Some are employed. Some of them can get their own shelter if just fucking left alone and not ticketed to death. That's all. That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, it's all been said before, and it's eloquently put, and nobody disagrees with you, and it doesn't have a hell of a lot to do with anything I said about Byers. But, you know, it is true that you are quite right. I think Catherine Byers' whole involvement, if you're saying this, that I believe that her involvement with the whole social, pseudo-social service system is, you know, based upon the premise that we'll help these poor homeless people, you know, who you know, in a piecemeal kind of way. And, you know, it wrings my heart, but then when some real solutions come along, you know, she recoils in horror at some of the details. I mean, it's just kind of disgusting.
Not criminalizing and not destroying people isn't a solution. You know, we need to convince people that homeless people have human and civil rights, and that interfering with them is wrong, so that they'll back off, so that eventually even politicians will feel safe saying, well, I don't want somebody to have to risk his job to go sign up for case management at a homeless service center. I'm not knocking the services we have. I'm saying
I am.
I think that 9 out of 10 homeless people don't need them. And if I'm wrong, well, certainly 7 out of 10 don't need them.
Well,
and
know
they're going to be pushed into needing them,
know that,
and they won't be there.
We know that 9 out of 10 need shelter and don't. 10 out of 10 need shelter and they don't have it. Instead, they have criminalization. And I think we both agree that sucks the big weenie.
But everyone
anything else?
A car that can sleep in it, that's a crime. There's no reason for it to be a crime. That's not the reason they made it a crime. It has nothing to do with owning a car or sleeping in it.
You know, I wish you were talking to buyers rather than to me. Then the passion in your voice.
I will talk to anyone that will listen.
Good. Well, you know, maybe we should have you interview her, because she is available. If you want to give her an interview and go into the tape recorder, she might be quite happy. But I wager, Linda, based upon my experience with you in the past, that you would have a difficulty presenting this kind of passionate a tone to Catherine Byers. I think your tone would change.
That's not to say change her position no matter what we say. But you on this radio, you can embrace the people that don't belong, acting like they're dependent and broken and going and standing in line in the daytime. You know, not just the campground will solve all those homeless people. It's like
People should be allowed to start a campground like you started out saying about Occupy. They should be allowed to create their own solutions. And it shouldn't be a crime to even think about it or talk to each other.
Yes, but they are not allowed. And the whole purpose of this discussion that I'm doing here is to show the what the politicians are doing and to distinguish the politicians from the activists. And so when you conflate the two, you do a disservice, in my view. And I don't like that. So that's why I've kind of cut you off.
Well, I don't feel like conflate them, and I got to keep saying that.
Well, as long as you clarify that, that's fine. Because it sounds like the passion in your voice sounds like it's directed in my direction. I'm probably a little paranoid here.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're not talking to Catherine Byers. You're talking to me. So you have to remember your audience.
No, but I'm talking to you because of how, on your tape, you talk to her. You allow her to say, she's talking about, what, 1 out of 10 homeless people that belong somewhere like HPHP or homeless.
I don't control what she says. But I do comment on it and rigorously and point it out and tried to bring out the fact that she her attitude towards the destruction of the homeless-run and homeless-initiated campground was indifference, and perhaps she didn't use the word relief, but I think she was concerned about the illegal behaviors she saw that was more important to her than the survival behavior that was happening everywhere around her. That was the problem.
Well, none of us want to watch someone else shit. We don't even watch ourselves shit.
Well, that's not even relevant. You know, Linda, that's not even relevant because, you know, she knew herself. They were not opening up the bathrooms, and therefore for her to get upset about it, to me, is she's more concerned about the sensibilities of upper middle class people, you know, than you know, the realities of the health needs of the homeless. So it's just, you know, I mean, I think her speeches speak for themselves. So.
Yes, and I think you did a good job of bringing out the blind spots.
Mm.
I just don't want your listeners to go away with the already established stereotype that everybody that's homeless is a desperate, broken bum. Or drunk. That's
I don't think most people listening to this broadcast have that perspective, and I don't think, you know, it's, and I'm glad you agree. I mean, it's certainly not true. And I don't think Byers has that perspective either, frankly. That the problem is, though, that she lacks the political courage, and she also has this fundamental middle class bias. But let's go on with hear more of her. You and I are frequently on this show, and
how many services they build, they're not dealing with the criminalization, which the city of Santa Cruz is a primary proponent of.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe there'll be some dealing with the criminalization up on campus tonight. I encourage people to go on up there and check out Tent University. There's events going on tonight up there. You have to park about a block away, but you can still check it out. Any events you want to mention, Linda? I know you're going to court yourself one of these years.
I would just encourage people to write to Gary Johnson because he probably could just be encouraging them.
You know, if you want to, I think it's 100 Roundtree Lane or something. I'm not sure. Maybe.
I don't know, but it's listed in the phone book under county.
Gary Johnson is in jail in Watsonville. He's in jail for sleep crime, essentially for sleeping on a bench with a political protest sign in front of the. As I said, in front of the county building, repeatedly being arrested for it, refusing to leave. Occupy Santa Cruzans got arrested for it and ticketed for it, but their tickets disappeared. But Johnson's ticket did not because he kept going back and insisted on it in his principled way, for which he is, of course, to be commended.
Because he's still homeless.
No, because he's determined to bring the issue to the public eye. He could very well hide in the bushes. It has nothing to do with his being homeless. His being homeless is incidental.
Seriously?
No, I don't think so. I think the fact of the matter is he feels very strongly about this issue. You know, and he is homeless.
Yeah, he does.
I mean, that's true. But if he wanted to sleep somewhere else, he probably could.
Sound just like Mike Rodkin at the moment, Robert. And
well,
I'm just
it is.
I'm
unfortunately, it's not that I agree with Mike Rodkin. It's that it's obvious he's choosing a specific place to sleep as a place of protest. Nobody's forcing him to sleep in front of the county building.
Getting back to my. Criminalizing 9/10 of the homeless people and the rest.
You didn't really answer that
one,
Linda. Go ahead.
I am. I'm trying to.
Go ahead.
What I'm trying to say is if he has to crawl under a bush because he's homeless instead of housed, that's the same as criminalizing him for being homeless. And what I mean by this, he is being forced not to be able to act like a human being because he doesn't pay rent or have a mortgage.
Yeah, you know, you're arguing to the converted, which is why I get impatient with you.
No, I'm not. Nobody in this fucking whole county seems to get it.
No, everybody gets it. Nobody wants to do anything about
it.
That's the problem.
Nobody's talking about it.
They're afraid the bigots will, like...
And Linda, that includes you. You're inside tonight, and you're not sleeping on any benches in front of the county building in solidarity with Gary, are you? You know, it's very nice to be passionate from your house.
You can't say that.
I don't know.
You're not in my house. I'm not in my house. I'm in a band, and I'm not going to say more because you're just trying to set me up to be criminalized.
Yes, I am. That's part of my master plan, Linda.
Wow. Well, anyway, the people are dying because of our blind spot.
Yeah, I know.
I'm grateful that you let me get it out, and I did get it out. And everybody that thinks that building a thing, whether it be a building or an intake form, is going to solve homelessness, has got somebody's head up their ass.
Well, you should know, Linda, because you've been doing this kind of work for 2 decades. You've been chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force. You've been homeless yourself. And, you know, you are quite knowledgeable on the bureaucracies, more so than I'm comfortable with, in fact, because I always chide you for going to these bureaucrats' meetings. So thank you for calling in on this. Feel free to call in again. Again, we've talked for 20 minutes instead of allowing buyers to say her deal. So that's frustrating for me, and that's one of the reasons that I was cutting into you, because I don't like it when we preach to the converted. There's, you know, Take Back Santa Cruz is not listening to our broadcasts. The activists are listening to our broadcasts, and they know all this stuff. So that's what bothers me.
You don't think any casual listeners?
No, there are a few, I imagine, for sure. And, you know, you feel passionately about it, and that annoys me, but that's my problem. It's right on that you feel passionate about it. So good for you. I'm going to go on with the buyer's tape, though.
Yeah, great. Good show. Bye.
All right.
Thank you for the
airtime. Sure. And Catherine Byers, interview a week ago. She's councilwoman, former mayor, and we're talking about the destruction of the River Street campground on December 8th.
Those people. Well, but as you know, a shelter for 1,500 people is not just, it certainly isn't impossible. There are vacant buildings all over town. But you see what happens when direct action folks try to occupy those buildings.
That is a little different. You're right. And I don't believe in people taking over private property.
But you've also seen that the city council has done very little in the last 20 years to do anything about
it. Disagree.
I think Michael Hernandez, way back in 2000, the year that you were proposing changes and cosmetic changes, I feel, small changes in the camping ordinance, more than cosmetic, but less than meaningful in the long run.
A lot of people want it.
Hernandez said, well, why don't we just get him a big building over in the west side? He was proposing, as an opportunistic attempt to oppose changes at Sugar and Crone, and perhaps you and Fitzmaurice might have gone along with. But he, you know, his proposal is available. We looked. I mean,
they were still trying to do that. That's exactly what we're trying to do. Is find a space and run it well.
Occupy Santa Cruz, of course, and Occupy throughout the country are fed up with city councils, police departments, and because we see that you guys aren't getting anywhere. Here you are, you know, 20 years later, you know, and we're hearing the same line. Oh, we're trying very hard. Well, you know, people out there are dying, and the reality is
every year we've added beds. We've done so much. 40 new beds, that's 40 people off the streets. Now, all right, I think there are 1,500.
And how many more are on the streets?
What is that small? Whatever that number is, it's 40 less. And so I look at, sometimes when I run races, I don't want to know how many people are in front of me. I want to know how many people are behind me. And sort of I look at the same way. I said, well, there's 40 less. That's all I know right now. All we lost, 40 less.
You know, it's not we try to derogate your approach, but it's just obvious that in terms of the real problem, this has done nothing meaningful other than for those 40 people, which 40 people are meaningful, but so are the 1,500 that because you're focusing on the 40 don't get any kind of surcease.
I know you don't want me to say this, but we're working on it.
Well, in the sense that, you see, it seems you're not working on it if you don't take the most direct way, which is to establish emergency shelter for people immediately, where you don't need, you know, it was done in San Lorenzo campground by homeless people. It had its warts. It had its problems. It upset you when you saw, you know, somebody going poo-poo, and I don't know what else you saw.
No.
Tell us all the detail. Any sexual behavior? She isn't answering these questions. I'm not going to get very far with that line of inquiry. In other words, it just seems...
I'm not disagreeing a lot of it with you. I'm just saying this is what I'm trying to do.
I know that. But I'm trying to hold you accountable as a council member to what needs to be done. Not,
and I don't argue what needs to be done. It's just how we get there. That's what we totally disagree on. How do we get there? How do we get those 1,500 people in
well,
something?
We're occupies and people
throughout the new program, 100 people in 180 days.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I mean, nothing wrong with that.
It's a wonderful program.
You're talking about what's it called? First choice housing, housing first?
I don't know what it's called. We're calling it 180 over 180. 180 people off the streets for 180 beds.
Sure. In the meantime, however, we have...
30 left.
Yeah,
but
I'm talking about the average plight of the average person on the street. I can't be really put aside by that. It sounds like you are trying to put aside that issue by saying, we're doing this, but no, not with respect to the basic issue.
I'm not putting aside. I understand it, and I know it. But this is what I am trying to do, both as a council member and as...
Well, let's turn to a few other issues, lest you grow tired of this particular discussion. Let me put another tape here. I guess, are you interested in finding out how much this... we'd like to occupy Santa Cruz people, and I certainly, as an individual, would like to know how much money the police department is actually spending on this latest surveillance effort to... Essentially, it appears to us, criminalize journalists, activists, and photographers who have no direct responsibility or involvement in any vandalism at this property. Arguably, there might be trespass, I suppose, although, again, as you and I might face charges together. You got no permission to go in the building.
I walked in.
And how many times were you in there?
I think twice.
And did the police ever tell you to leave?
Nope.
Did you ever see any no trespassing sign?
Nope.
Yeah, I know you were anxious about going in initially, because you seemed a little worried when I came up to talk to you about it. And I told you it doesn't seem the police are doing anything. Do you recall the conversation we had?
I'm afraid I don't.
I was the one who led you astray.
No, I didn't go in for a long time, and then I was going to go home. I had to go somewhere. I thought, well, just peek in, see what it looks like. I walked in and walked out, because I couldn't see anything from the outside. I'd been there a couple hours outside. Mm-hmm. So I just popped in, looked around. And
you remember talking to me that night?
I'm afraid I don't.
Fine. Yeah. So you've just forgotten me after all these... Here he is again. Oh, well, yeah. So let's turn to a couple other things. One of the things I'm concerned about, even though it's no big deal on my agenda, is... And these are questions you've heard before. I'm just kind of checking in with you and probably going to get the same response. When you ran in 2008, you were concerned about public comment at City Council being expanded in various ways, whether it's by restoring 3 minutes of oral communication. But you obviously haven't been interested, for example, in restoring what is the usual procedure on the consent agenda, which is the majority of items on the Santa Cruz City Council, which was done before, as is done throughout California, with a few exceptions. Which is to say, if a member of the public wants to have an item discussed, make too many, he can take it off the agenda. She or he can do that. You said no when I brought this issue up to you a couple of years ago, but do you feel that you don't have the support for it, or you simply feel it's a good approach just to allow the council members essentially privileged access and a gateway to the council so people can't get any discussion other than a 2-minute brief period about what maybe 20 or 30 items on the city council agenda beforehand?
Has been, if any member of the public comes forward and wants something pulled, a council member pulls it, and I think they have every time. I certainly do.
Would you like me to document the number of times I've been up there and had items refused?
Well,
yeah.
Maybe I haven't yours, Robert. Sorry. Maybe they were redundant, but anyway, I know I have a lot. I mean, if it's something that is not just going to be something for a speech, it's something... I was surprised at that change. I wouldn't have done it myself. The mayor gets to do that. You'd have to have 4 votes to change it. I wasn't going to lead that. And I thought, we'll see how it goes. It's not great, but to me it seems to be working.
So if you became mayor, would you attempt to change it?
Yeah, I would.
You would restore the old system?
Yes.
When will you be mayor so we can all sit down?
I will be mayor.
No, I encourage anyone to go to city council these days. Still, also we have the question of the oral communication.
You know, Don has expanded it to 3 minutes.
Actually, on the agenda, it still says 2 minutes.
It does, but I know. I noticed that too.
In the last meeting, he only allowed 2 minutes.
Then how many people are there to speak?
I
don't know. I haven't talked to him about it.
So why should it be that the Santa Cruz City Council, unlike the Board of Supervisors, does not allow anyone who wants to speak go up there and speak for 3 minutes? Would you favor that policy?
I would favor that policy.
Well, you didn't implement it when you were mayor in 1999.
We had 3 minutes.
No. 3 minutes within a 30-minute period. Board of Supervisors allows everyone to speak.
For how long? I didn't set that 30 minutes. No, I didn't.
So are you saying that everyone who wanted to speak could speak during you were mayor?
I
would be surprised if that were the case.
I'd have to look it up. I don't remember. I thought anyone who wanted to speak could speak.
But you're willing to support that policy if you become mayor again?
Yes, I would. I definitely.
It's on tape, Byers.
I would. I swear. There would be 4 votes to overturn me, but I would do it.
Now, why would you do that if you haven't got the votes? Why even bring it up?
You're going to say that. Out of here.
I'm not just being sarcastic, because this is... Obviously, there are circumstances where you feel it is a matter of principle, right?
Yeah, I suppose there are. I'm tired.
Are you... You're backing off from that tape recorder as I shove it in your face? All right, we're going to take a breather, or possibly this may end the interview, although I have many more questions. Maybe another point at which you've got some more time. We could talk about it again, because I...
Tell me what else, and we'll see.
Other questions here...
And before we get to the other questions, this is another break. You can call in with your comments and questions at 427-3772. But give me a minute or two to give my own thoughts here. Didn't quite finish because of my wrestling bout with Linda earlier. Let's see. No, I don't have any time to give my thoughts. But, hey, the audience comes first. Let's see. You are on Free Radio Santa Cruz with your favorite talk show host.
Hi, this is Becky Johnson.
Hey, Becky.
Yeah, I wanted to speak on behalf of Catherine Byers that when she was mayor and people would line up for oral communications, if there were two or three speakers, she would always extend oral communications for the remaining speakers within reason. Julia Scott also did that.
Were speakers ever not allowed to speak because there was a limited period of time?
Yeah. She didn't extend oral communications indefinitely for whatever line there was. But if oral communications was ending and there were just a few speakers left, she always extended it for the remaining speakers.
However, she did not do it. The
Chris Crown said he was like he admired her the most, her and Billy Scott the most, and yet he never extended it for anyone. He always cut off oral communication right abruptly at 30 minutes.
However, both these women, I don't know about Celia Scott, but I think it's probably true with her too, or I would have probably noticed it, but maybe not. Unlike the Board of Supervisors, which actually officially requires the board, or at least their procedures are such that you can get to speak even if you're end of a line of 50 speakers at oral communication, but you may have to come back at the end of the meeting.
I think that's a better policy, and I wish the Santa Cruz City Council would adopt that, where they could always extend the oral communications for the remaining two or three speakers. And, you know, if there were like a lot of people, they'd say, okay, well, is there anyone else here that wants to speak? We will continue oral communications at the conclusion of our other agenda item.
Any other thoughts on anything we've said so far, that Byers has said so far, I should say?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It just is dreary to hear her say, well, we've created 40 new spaces when homelessness has been increasing. If you just look from the 1990 census to the 2000 census and then forward, we find that homelessness has tripled from 1990 to now. And all of the people who don't fit into these programs are not, they're not suited for everybody. They're not everybody's cup of tea, shall we say. All of these people, like the Gary Johnsons of the world, and remember, Gary Johnson is the least likely person to be able to get into a shelter. He would be triaged out. He is an able-bodied, single, unaccompanied male. That means he doesn't have any dependents, so he can't get in the family shelter. He's able-bodied, so anyone who is handicapped is ahead of him. And what do they say, 56% or some big number or handicapped in mental or physical or emotionally handicapped in some way, he would almost have, he would have zero chance of getting into any shelter program other than the Winter Armory shelter. And that's always been true.
You know, I think Linda's point that I think she was passionately making, that I was resisting, but actually, you know, I've taken this sort of halfway position at different times that you don't arrest people for sleeping as long as, you know, until there's adequate shelter. Linda's point, I think, is that there's no such thing as adequate shelter. The real issue is criminalization of the homeless.
Right.
And that's really the issue here. People got to be able to form, find, obtain their own shelter, not some institutional crap that is set aside from some warehouse that has been decided by, you know, given the economic circumstances have destroyed housing and just, you know, essentially created a new poverty class. That's
well,
really
this whole criminalization of innocent behavior, you know, sleeping, of course, is been our number one issue for quite a while, because how can sleeping be a criminal act? It doesn't make any sense. It's not even a voluntary act. And using a blanket.
I gotcha. I mean, you know, again, I feel the same impatience with you as I do with Linda, because you and I are, you know, largely, I think, talking to the converted. We all agree these things are ridiculous,
so
abusive.
So you have someone like Lane and Byers who are spending a disproportionate of their time fluffing up these nonprofit organizations that serve homeless people. And I don't want to diss these organizations too much, because they really do serve life-saving, vital functions for many people, without a doubt. But it's can't serve as the band-aid or the token that they point to in every time and say, well, yeah, the sleeping den is bad, but we put 40 more beds up, you know?
I got
40
you.
Beds. So what about, we have got to get a paradigm that treats all people with the same dignity and respect, and if a person is in need, that we find what it is they need and we fill that need.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that this Occupy 75 River Street, it was like we had this big elephant in the living room. We got all these people out of doors, there's no place to be, and all of these empty buildings dotting there. What's up with this paradigm that it's legal to take all these community assets, which is what every developed property is in any community, and to take these community assets and to so badly distribute them that huge sections of the population are in dire suffering and need and literally dying something like 28 years before they should, statistically. And we have over 500 homeless deaths to look at now, so it's not a small data pool.
Fair enough. I'm going to end it there unless there's more you've got to say specifically about any particular comments.
I will listen in, and if you get too far off the mark, you might hear my words.
Until I decide to muffle you, I certainly will.
Yeah, you might have to keep that mute button handy.
Thank you, Becky.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. So you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM. Hey, no, it's 101.3 FM, but it was 101.1 FM. But anyway, that's what we are now, as long as we can keep broadcasting, which I haven't heard the latest update, but there is a financial crunch, or at least there was in the last few weeks, and I don't know that that's changed. If you want to make sure that your favorite show and me, your favorite talk show host, continues to babble at you with these bureaucrats, then you're going to have to kick down some cash. You get out, go online to freakradio.org, and you'll find out how to pony up some bucks. Or you can mail in money or pennies to Free Radio Santa Cruz, P.O. Box 7811, 95061 in Santa Cruz. Free Radio Santa Cruz, P.O. Box 7811, 95061. So, a couple of comments on this latest round with Councilmember and former Mayor Catherine Byers. This going back to the whole business of the destruction of the campground. Oh, you know, they were warned they could move, they could take their stuff. They could take their stuff where? There's no place to store it. Catherine Byers' precious homeless lack of services center has removed all the lockers, last I heard, for office space or a community room or something that they bureaucrats who have a lot of storage space at home or enough to at least store their clothes and their toiletries made the decision on. So the homeless people who had their campground space and their secure area destroyed by Chief Vogel's police without a peep of protest from Catherine Byers. In fact, she said she was sort of indifferent to it as it happened because, after all, people were warned that they could pick up their stuff and scamper and hide in the bushes to somewhere, nowhere, wherever they might hide. That was my reaction to that. And then this passionate comment about 4:30 every day, 1,500 people have to hide out. But she has an opportunity as a councilwoman to actually do and say something about it in a meaningful way, to make a public statement, but she won't, at least not in terms of this campground that was destroyed. Or maybe because she doesn't see it as a real resource, but as some sort of a blot on the park system. I don't know. It's hard to tell. She kind of buyers champions the Housing First, or 180, over 180, something like that, the program she talked about. Again, it's another one of those national fundraising schemes, national 10-year plan to end homelessness things that really fundamentally obscures and ignores the basic issue that there are, by a factor of 3 to 6, I don't know how much it is, but a significant number of vacant properties, vacant buildings throughout the country that could be used to house homeless people. And we're not even talking about taking away private property from individuals who need that property because they live there or because it's their livelihood, but people who are engaging in investment behaviors. And again, this goes, of course, to capitalism. And that's an issue that is, of course, coming up more and more these days. We talked about city council processes, which in a way are completely irrelevant, since city council is, even when there was more oral communications time, for two or three speakers at the end of the oral communication session, as Becky reminded us of under Catherine Byers and Celia Scott when they were mayor more than a dozen years ago, or even when there is opportunity on the consent agenda where the person could take an item off the agenda to put it up for a public discussion in front of the city council. They don't mean, I was afraid people might misunderstand that term, but taking it off the agenda doesn't mean postponing it. It means actually just making it available for individual discussion rather than being voted on as a block as part of the consent agenda. That's now been destroyed by simply fiat, by, you know, the decree of Ryan Coonerty. It was just an incredible constitution-crushing kind of maneuver, a public access-crushing maneuver. I think the Constitution really talks about that specifically. She said she would try to change it. No good for her. Although she said things about ending the sleeping ban that she, when she got the power, she wouldn't do. So it's really hard to know how much of what she says is really likely to. Well, it isn't really going to be an option. But I don't think her credibility is too strong on some of this stuff. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hello?
Hello.
Robert.
Yes, this Scope It Out Scott.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, I think the point that you failed to make there while you were rambling on and getting sidetracked and trying to fill in blanks and stuff was that even when everybody got to speak at the oral communications and even when the public could pull any item off the agenda that the consent agenda that they wanted to speak on it, the city council didn't listen to us. I think that's the point that you should have made or you were trying to make, but you didn't.
Yeah, I mean, my thought is not only don't they listen, even if they were, you know, their ears...
They don't give a fuck.
Right, and they, or, you know, and more important than that, I know you struggled with that so-called liberal council in 1988-99 for quite a time. I mean, you had a so-called council majority of Fitzmaurice, Crone, Sugar, and Byers. And, you know, you were hoping to see some changes, right?
Yes, I was hoping, I was trying to, you know, spearhead some changes and made very little, if any at all, progress at all, you know. It's, you know, when it comes to the homeless issue, you know, like I said earlier with when the talks with Don Lane, is they will try to find the most expensive thing to do which will serve the fewest number of people. Instead of finding the cheapest thing that will serve the largest number of people, they'll try to find the most expensive thing that will serve the fewest number of people.
Here, here. I mean, there. I mean, there you go. Yeah, I know that, the only thing that came out of the homeless icky task force, as I like to call it, which is what Catherine Byers eventually did instead of ending the sleeping ban, she set up a little committee that made all kinds of nice recommendations, most of which, well, almost all of which really went nowhere. But the meaningful ones about decriminalization have not just gone nowhere. They have been contradicted by increasing repression on the police, on the streets by the police and by the hosts and by these other, you know, merchant-oriented public space seizing and constricting procedures.
Right. You know, and even the fact that they lowered the fine on, you know, getting a ticket for illegal camping didn't really do much because of, even if the ticket was only $12, all the court fees still add up to, what, $98 or something?
Well, originally, yeah, I mean, first of all, it wasn't for camping. It was still the same heavy fine for camping or heavier fine if you have put up a tent. But if you sleep after 11 o'clock at night or you set up you cover up with a blanket, the fine was reduced to a total of, if you added all the court costs, $54 when it was originally done in 1999. That is now escalated to somewhere between $100 and $200 now, which pretty much was what it was before. I suppose that's less because, you know, $162 in 1999 is, you know, is costs more than $160 in 2012. But so what? You know, it's still horseshit. Something homeless people can't pay. There has been a fundamental change in the sleeping ban that was actually put in by the city attorney, which says if you get on a waiting list for one of these rackets, the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or the, you know, which actually includes the River Street Shelter and the Paul Lee Loft, then tickets you get for camping, any kind of camping, including with a tent, will be dismissed by the city attorney short of court.
Right.
Which is, you know,
as you constantly say, the Homeless Service Center won't give people letters to take to the city attorney.
Well, let me clarify that. If you are given a ticket, the city attorney is supposed to get your ticket through the police department and reverse it and strike it down, not discharge it. And in fact, I think this is probably happening. What you can't get is a receipt from the Homeless Lack of Services Center that you're on a waiting list so that you don't get a ticket in the first place. So you show it to the cop and you say, you know, officer, I'm on the goddamn waiting list. Don't ticket me. Don't run me through this process. Leave me alone. And that is something that...
Well, the cops won't do that, even if the...
I agree, they won't. But you see, for those of us actors who are trying to change things, it is...
Well, I understand, but yeah. Robert, you're expecting something from the police?
No, no, I'm not. Not at all. No, nope, not expecting anything from the police.
Okay.
You misunderstand. I'm expecting that the police will do exactly what you say. They'll say, fuck you, sir, or I'm sorry, sir.
No, they'll say, tell it to the judge.
Right, whatever.
Yeah, that's what they always say.
What they will then do is they will...
No matter how much you have the law on your side, Scott,
they will write the ticket.
Right.
And at that point, we will have documentation that they were told by an official agency that there was no shelter, yet they wrote a ticket. Those same conditions produced a federal court decision down south. And that's the reason we have asked for that, that it will document the unconstitutional behavior of the police force.
Yes, but Robert, as you have pointed out several times, mm-hmm. even though courts all over the land have said that, you know, lack of shelter space is a reason for not citing people, the courts here in the Santa Cruz County have never agreed with that.
It doesn't matter. This is a federal court that made this decision.
I understand that, but there's still...
It doesn't matter. If it's taken to federal court, which it
is... Well, yes, that's what I'm trying to say.
Which it has not been done.
You have to be willing to fight beyond
yes.
these local courts.
Yes, of course. But that's obviously where it would go, and that's what the point is, Scott.
Obviously. How many homeless people are willing to actually do that? I mean, one out of a thousand.
No, you're missing the point.
The point is,
if there are receipts that are issued, then individual homeless people who show them to the police and are still given tickets, it's not that you appeal the ticket, you go for an injunction in federal court against this practice because you have 47 cases of people who showed their receipt and they were still told, here's your ticket, buddy. And, you know, I guess they will argue, well, we dismiss the tickets later, but that still deprived them of sleep that night, deprived them of a place to stay. They were forced to pack up their stuff and move at a cost to their health and safety. They were still non-custodially arrested, which is what happens when you get a ticket. You can't leave. You are, in effect, under arrest for that period of time. So,
right.
That's the reason I proposed it. We actually proposed it back at when Peace Camp 2010 was activating the peace movement that was trying to, you know, demonstrate to the community that the courts were corrupt and abusive.
Okay, so what do the courts here locally have to say about that, Robert?
Well, you don't take it to the courts locally.
No, it did go to the courts here locally.
We know what they had to say about it, Scott. The question is,
okay.
when you create the documentation and you take it to the federal court, they say something else. That's what we found.
Well, we're still waiting on that, aren't we?
We don't have the documentation because Monica Martinez is not doing that because
with just the cases of Ed Fry and the others who, like Linda,
that's not sufficient. In fact, in Ed Fry is a housed person, so he can't use that. He didn't go to the homeless services center, and
I'm just talking about the whole issue of camping in the first place. You know.
I think you're missing some of the legal technicalities. There was
the necessity defense. And I guess
it's not the necessity.
Ed can't claim that because he's got a
right.
House.
We're kind of getting lost. I think maybe losing our listeners here in this discussion.
Well, but, Robert, come on.
So let's go ahead and make your point, and let me move on with the last.
No, go ahead and make your point.
I'm waiting for you to do your because I want to. Well, my point is to finish Byers's interview because I want to.
Oh, I thought you had already finished it.
No, it's not quite finished.
The thing is you know, about that is, you know, would you be as mean to her or, you know, as untactful with her if she was your grandmother?
I don't know. I mean, probably. I mean, I get pretty nasty with my parents, so I might. You never can tell, you know.
Okay. Well, yeah, you're probably a handful as a child.
I'm a cranky character, I got to tell you.
All right, Robert.
Thank you, Scott.
Bye.
So, let's see. Was there anything else I had to say about this last round? I don't think there is. Well, her claim that, you know, she claims at the current time anybody who wants to talk on one of the so-called consent agenda items on the city council agenda, which is most of the things at city council. And I'm not saying that really it makes any difference because, as our caller has just pointed out, and it's quite true, even when you could talk on the consent agenda, even when you could speak at oral communications at greater length, you were ignored by the city council. It was a closed process. It was an elite and privileged hierarchical process. It was essentially a non-transparent, staff-dominated process. But
Still, there was more opportunity at least to get your message out to the community in a certain way because, you know, it was televised and it went out over the community TV. So I've increasingly become disillusioned with that as having any real meaning unless you have some independent group that's actually trying to mobilize the community in some way, either through the initiative process like the DSAL movement is successfully doing, and like the anti-Coast Hotel anti-development or the anti-Coast Hotel movement did in 2005. But, and we're going to hear a little bit about that from Byers, I think, in this final bit of the interview. Or really establishing significant mass protests that are also an alternative to the initiative process and to the city council process, if they get widespread enough. But that, you know, I'm not even talking about a revolutionary situation where there's an alternate center of power, but if people become sufficiently restive on an issue, then the council, I think, begins, at least some people on the council, become nervous and begin to listen. But generally, simply bringing a crowd to city council isn't enough, as we saw from the rent inspection ordinance and other things last year. So that leads us back to Catherine Byers. Again, interview from last Friday. Let's hear the last of it.
I better put on my glasses. In Los Angeles and in San Diego, there has been a policy by those cities that even if there's a shelter bed available, because of the general shelter shortage, police shall not arrest anyone for sleeping during dark period, provided they're not involved in other crimes, and provided they're, I think in Los Angeles, it's 10 feet away from a business entrance. Would you be supportive of such a policy in Santa Cruz?
I'd have to know more about their policy. I mean, you just give me a little tweak on it, but I would really want to know a lot more about it. It sounds reasonable, the little bit you've told me, but that's your version, so I'd have to really look in it. So I'm not committing myself to anything.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't even really... I'm looking for a commitment, of course, but I'm also interested in your inclination. I know that in December of 1999, when the task force to examine the camping ordinance, which you set up, mm-hmm. and many of us regarded as a delaying tactic, and I think you regarded it as an attempt to bring the community together on some kind of consensus on the issue, which you felt you couldn't get eventually. As you said in your famous statement, there's just no place for them. That's a famous quote of yours. You remember that one?
You're shaking your head.
You shouldn't. It's a shameful statement, Catherine.
I don't remember hardly anything. Yeah.
Me too. I'm having memory problems. But Christopher Crone and then council member, newly elected council member Keith Sugar, brought up a proposal in the only session in December, which is that there will be the camping ban shall be suspended over the winter unless there's a health and safety concern. You and Fitzmaurice joined with Rotkin, Matthews, and Hernandez to vote that down.
I can't remember what my thinking was in 19.
Would you still do that?
12 years ago.
It's the same. The same issue will come up next week. The same issue is always on the table.
It's one of those ifs. I hate if questions. There's no way to really answer them.
Well, it's a way of kind of trying to get.
Well, you have to get a different way. But I'm not going to say what I would do if this under those circumstances. From what I said in 1999, it's crazy. Out of it. No.
You feel that perhaps you might disagree with your position about this?
I might. I don't know.
Okay, now I appreciate your, you know, an honest answer is an honest answer, assuming you're giving me straight answers, of course. So, I don't know if you're aware of it, but if it were shown to you that up and down, and it's an if again, but actually it's pretty close to an is rather than an if, that the great majority of tickets issued under the downtown ordinances around the sitting ban, for instance, which you voted against initially, you were the only council member to vote against the sitting ban in 1994, I believe, is when it came up under the Kennedy Council. If we could show you that the great majority of people who are getting tickets are homeless people, that is to say they either have transitory 115 Coral Street or homeless addresses, would you be interested in repealing that ban? If you had the, I'm going to say if you had the votes, but as a matter of principle.
You know, I can't say, Robert. Those are, again, it is almost one of those ifs. Do I know? I'd have to take a lot of thought of it. I'd have to look at it. I'd have to look at language. I don't know whether I would or not. And this, at this point,
where it's all about economic development. I wouldn't have any support for it, that's for sure. So I'm not going to answer that. I just don't know. It's not going to happen right now.
There is a controversy in San Francisco legally around this issue.
I know there is. I know there is. I try to follow that.
Right. Yeah. It hasn't actually hit the courts yet. I guess what I'm trying to find out is, has your position changed yourself on these issues? Obviously, there are new considerations that come up, but do you feel you've become more conservative in the last 20 years on these issues?
I don't think I have at all.
Or the opposite direction?
I don't think I have. I personally, in my principles, have not. I don't think I have become more conservative.
So, police review. You are a supporter of police review. In fact, you seem to be pressing for it when Kennedy was slowing it up year after year, and then it was when it was destroyed. I take it, did you speak out against the destruction of police review in 2003?
I wasn't on council then.
I mean, as a member of the public?
No, I didn't.
Is that a kind of a, I know that some council members do speak up on issues, former council members, when they're off the council. Do you do that as well occasionally?
I was off council for 8 years. I never wrote a letter, and I never went to a meeting.
No. You were fed up with the city council?
No, I wasn't fed up. I just thought it's up to them now. I don't really. It just wouldn't be in for me to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, there are other council members like Councilmember Celia Scott or Mayor Diz, quite outspoken on a number of issues.
Very definitely.
And you have been an activist in the past. Have been very outspoken on issues around Lighthouse Field.
Oh yeah. No. I've done it. That's for sure. I'm capable of doing it, but I didn't do it at council.
Last activist activity you've been involved in that you remember?
The last what?
Activist activity.
Coast Hotel.
And that was when you were off the council.
Uh-huh. That was the only time. I never went to a meeting.
You signed to something to the effect that you were...
A group got together to bring it to... I never got involved in it, didn't go to a meeting, didn't write a letter, didn't talk to council members, but when the vote was 4-3 to approve it, you know, tear down the Dream Inn, build a conference center, when it was 4-3, I thought, whoa, this is too big of a project for have it 4-3. So many of us, several of us, I should say, not many, got together and decided to bring it to a vote of the people. So I agreed to raise the money to do that. So my job was to raise money to do the ballot initiative. And
you were successful in defeating that move.
We were successful. We got the signatures, but we never had to take it to a vote because a poll was done. You know, we're quite confident that pollster showed that it would lose. So the Dream Inn backed off.
Similar.
So I was very active in that, and that was, again, and my reasoning was you don't do something city, you know, money for 60 million to 100 million without 4-3 vote.
You also may have some doubts about the wisdom of the project itself.
Oh, I definitely did. I definitely did. And so when I went and got signatures, because I live in the neighborhood, I didn't want not my backyard. I had no idea where people stood on. So I purposely went and got the days I went out with my little clipboard to get signatures. I went in the Prospect Heights area. I went Windham and Windham. I mean, way, way far away from my neighborhood. Everybody signed it. Yeah, it was very, very interesting.
There's currently an initiative being circulated to oppose the desal. Are you likely to become active on this issue?
You know, I think I'll be forced to be active because I'll be on the city. I'm on the city council, so I will. I'm looking for the EIR to come out. So far, I have voted, I think, all but once to continue to fund it. So everything that's come to us, I've supported, except I think one, Hillary and I voted no on some allocation of money to do something for it.
Is there a block on the council that many of us see, in your view, as the Coonerty block? That is to say, a group of four council members who frequently vote together. Coonerty, Geraces, Bryant, and Robinson.
It's probably no different than any council where there's a block. There's usually our four people. I don't care what council it is. I certainly have, we had that when I was on with Keith and Tim and Christopher. So probably, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know because you're there every...
It's pretty much 5-2 or 6-1. That tells you that there's some kind of block. But it doesn't tell you there's a block. They just think that way, and sometimes I don't.
By a block, I mean a consensus of opinion of a certain ideological sort that...
I think so, yes.
Don disputed that. He didn't think that was the case. So I mean, it's always been my impression that that's the case, and he took a different point of view. Don has said, which actually changes his prior position, he probably wasn't aware of it, but that regarding the homeless lack of services center, that the policy that was being followed under Doug Loisel, possibly under Ken Cole, maybe under Letitia Schwartz, but is not being followed, in spite of her claim that it is, under Monica Martinez, regarding the new sleeping ban provision law, which says if you have a, if you're on a waiting list, you can have your ticket automatically dismissed. We've asked that there be a slip of paper, a receipt, a document given. And Martinez has refused to do this repeatedly, but then has come publicly forward when I challenged her and said, oh, we do that all the time. But I haven't been able to find one of these elusive slips of paper. Do you favor this policy, as a member of the board of the Homeless Lack of Service Center, of making it available so that a police officer, when he sees this, can say, you know, this is a waste of my time, or they can just proceed?
You know, it seems reasonable, but I don't know what is happening on that, whether they do give out these pieces of paper or they feel they can't give them out because any one day maybe there's room. I'm not sure it's always full. So there should be a simple, straightforward mechanism to do that. And I don't have the answer.
Well,
I haven't talked or worked with Monica on it.
You bring it up to the Homeless Lack of Service Center.
Yeah, I'll bring it up with Monica to start with.
Okay. And the second question, which we posed a year and a half ago before the board with Monica and repeatedly asked her since, which she has, again, I've got to tell you, lied about or is misinformed about. I hate to use those words, but I think I have to say, based on the way she was answering, that has to be my... she's either an idiot or she's being deceptive about the issue. I don't think she's an idiot. She doesn't seem to me to be lack intelligence and verve and, you know, a great ability to present a certain smiling image to everybody as to, you know, how enthusiastic she is, which upsets me because I know what she's doing, and at least on some issues, that upsets me. She has said that, you know, there used to be a policy, if the shelter is full, somebody comes in, gets a letter, says, I got a ticket, write me a letter to the court. They refused to do that. I confirmed that as recently with Nancy, 3 weeks ago with Nancy Lou Biscotti. Are you willing to see that policy re-implemented or to push for that?
You know, I've got to talk to Monica. I'm not making any promises what I'll do, what I won't do, but it seems something we could...
Pretty reasonable. So we'll and pretty out. Minimal stuff. You look tired. Did you have enough of this interview, Kathy?
You are exhausting, Robert.
I appreciate
you. Thank you for the cookie. I need a little
sugar. We have a second one here. It's another macaroon for you.
Thank
you. You can take it home with you if you'd like.
I'm fine.
You got a promise to end the sleeping ban. Any final thoughts that you want to put out there?
I was like, it was good to get together. It's been a while.
And that was the interview with Catherine Byers a week ago. My comments about the last segment, you know, I can't remember. I have to study it more around the issue of, I guess it was the issue. Was it the issue of the downtown? If somebody shows me that these only homeless people are getting ticketed for sitting down, why would you have to study it more to be concerned about that being discriminatory enforcement? I mean, that's a ridiculous answer, frankly. It has no... It's a sort of a politician's answer that has a superficial credibility to it, but it's nonsense on an issue like this. Anybody who has any basic civil liberties concern at all that's worth her salt would say, yeah, I'd be concerned about that, but bring me the proof. Or let's see the proof. But she, you know, it ain't an issue for her. There's no support. It's not going to happen. It's not politically possible. It's all these usual nostrums that say, we don't have to be concerned about the human rights of poor people in our community because politically we can't really do much about it. That's what she's saying. And while that may be true, it would certainly be less true if people were trying to do something about it and standing up and speaking about it and taking action, however limited they could, to actually do something real about it, even in terms of 6-1 votes. Her claim that she doesn't think she's become more conservative is also self-delusional or disingenuous, I don't know which, or maybe it's just casually... sloppy, because in 1994, and against a United Council pressing the merchant agenda of sit near a building, get a ticket, do it twice, go to jail, I guess at that time it was you can't be within, I think it was within 6 feet of a building. Now that's expanded to 14 feet, taking up 95% of the downtown space on the sidewalks. and 100% of the space in all business districts outside the downtown. And she won't even talk about changing it. You know, she has to think about it. She has to look at the statistics. Oh, there's been a lot of development. She's obviously become much more conservative on this issue. And yet she doesn't want to believe it. In a way, it's kind of like the American public. Liberals in the American public or the Democrats who are, you know, getting warped more and more to the right, who allow more and more war appropriations, even when they are supposedly in power. But it's a sickness that's in the political system, apparently. This political system is strong enough to warp the thinking of those who think they can manipulate the levers of power and are themselves instead manipulated by the levers of power. Police review, that is civilian police review, real oversight of the police department, which we've never had, but we had the beginnings of a start towards with the Citizens Police Review Board, which Byers originally supported somewhat weakly, although she... It was badly delayed by the dead Scott Kennedy, who continued to believe that somehow he could form deals with the police department. And, of course, Don Lane, who was mayor during that time in the early 90s when the Citizens Police Review Board was being considered, who thought instead there should be sort of a looser commission that was... it didn't have real subpoena power over the police, but that could talk about issues. Don shares my vice of liking to do a lot of talking about things. Again, oh, she didn't speak out about it when they killed the police review board in 2003 because I wasn't on the council then, she says. Or does that mean it wasn't an issue for the community? Does that mean it wasn't something that she saw going down and she was just going to ignore the whole thing? I don't see that as an act of a courageous person who is concerned about these matters. Maybe it isn't a matter of her primary concern. The one issue she did get involved in was the Coast Hotel, which was in her neck of the woods. So maybe it's easy to suggest that it might be a personal, you know, matter of, you know, not in my neighborhood. But, you know, I was also against the Coast Hotel. In fact, I got arrested at city council for trying to speak on the issue. It was the one time I was actually assaulted by a police officer in Santa Cruz, Deputy Chief Steve Clark, who assaulted me and then subsequently threatened me verbally. He didn't like the idea of being sued in court, and he was really upset that I was... His name was initially on a lawsuit involving an arrest the year before. But that's another story, in which I've talked about actually probably in the past a number of times. But no, she's become more conservative, and she is not either aware of it or being honest about it. I think she's probably not aware of it. I mean, it sounds like she's honestly answering these questions. You know, her answer that it was a 4-3 vote on this issue of the one issue she was involved in, the Coast Hotel issue that was being pushed, multi-million dollar development. Wow. That it sounds like a politician's answer to me, I think. But, you know, that is to say, it's something you tell the public, I wouldn't normally get involved, but a 4-3 vote is too close, when what she really means is this project sucks, and I think enough on the issue to come forward. But, again, that's just my reaction as I hear this tape. It's interesting that she's going to be involved in the D-cell. She is already involved in the D-cell. She's already going along with the D-cell majority on this issue, and indeed there's a proposal before City Council that they're trying to cut off the initiative people by proposing their own proposal, but their own proposal is much weaker than the initiative being circulated by the folks who don't want to see the multi-hundred million dollar D-cell project, because it specifically, the council proposal can be overruled by future councils, whereas the initiative can only be overruled by a vote of the voters, as I understand it. So, that, what do we got here? I think that pretty much, her defense of Monica Martinez. I have to find out what's going on. I don't know what's happening. This issue has been raised repeatedly at City Council, to Don Lane, at the Board of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. If she hasn't been aware of it, it's strange because one of her main supposed interests and commitments is to homeless people. And as Linda LeMaster and Becky Johnson have both said on this show, the basic issue, the basic and most fundamental issue is decriminalization. Of course, she doesn't see it that way. At least Catherine Byers doesn't. Obviously, her sense of the most important issue is a shelter for a few, a growing number of shelter beds for a few. But as Scott Graham called in and cynically said, he thinks it's the most amount of money for the least amount of people. Is one would think you'd have to be dealing with nincompoops to think that they would actually propose this. But maybe it's people who are simply aware that the constituency that they fundraise in, or that they feel most indebted to, or apprehensive of, whether it's the police department, or most beholden to the staff, is hostile to any real broad solutions here, real broad initiatives like, you know, campgrounds or decriminalization, which are obvious first steps that need to be done in order to deal with emergency shelter. I don't know. So, at least she admits there's a conservative bloc on the city council. Lane, I think, wants to obscure this because more often than Byers, he votes with the Coonerty bloc. And he doesn't like to acknowledge it, is my suspicion as to why he answered that the way he did. She said she would consider that there should be, that people, the receipts should be issued for people getting camping tickets so they can show the receipt to the police officer, which, as Scott Graham has pointed out, wouldn't alter necessarily at all the police officers. We'll give them a ticket anyway, but might be useful to activists, particularly with Occupy Santa Cruz attorneys beginning involved, if anyone ever get more involved in the homeless situation, taking the matter not to local court, as Scott points out, that's useless, but to federal court, where we have been successful, and both in Fresno and in Los Angeles and San Diego. You know what I was going to read was actually some more successes, which you would have learned about already had you been subscribed to the Huff email list, which puts this out. If you want to be on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom email list, you can. All you got to do is send an email to rnorse, that's me, 3, R-N-O-R-S-E, 3, number 3, at hotmail.com. Here's a story from the India Times, or Times of India. The Supreme Court of India, the state of India, has broadened the ambit of right of life to bring in a citizen's right to sleep peacefully under it. A citizen has a right to sound sleep because it is fundamental to life, the Supreme Court said on Thursday of last week, it sounds like, a week ago, while ruling that the police action on a sleeping crowd at Baba Ramdev's rally at Ramlila Maidan amounted to a violation of their crucial right. Sleep is essential for a human being to maintain the delicate balance of health necessary for its very existence and survival. Sleep is therefore a fundamental and basic requirement without which the existence of life itself would be in peril, the court said, terming it as a basic human right. Authorities have taken steps to protect citizens from being disturbed while they are asleep, like placing curbs on the playing of music late at night. But Tuesday's order elevates the right to sleep in the hierarchy of rights and may goad the authorities to protect it. A bench of justices B.S. Chauhan and Swatantra Kumar was unanimous that the police erred gravely by clamping prohibitionary orders under Section 144 of the Criminal Procedure Code on the night of June 4th when the gathering at Ramdev's yoga camp was sleeping peacefully. Though Justice Kumar wrote the lead judgment, Justice Chauhan elaborated on sleep as a fundamental right crucial to life and put it on the same plane as the right to privacy and the right to food, consistently held by the Supreme Court as an inviolable right, which was part of a right to life under Article 21 of the Constitution. That's the Indian Constitution. The U.S. Constitution in our enlightened state has no right to food and a very limited right to privacy. But here's what the justice said about the Indian right and the right to sleep. Right of privacy and the right to sleep have always been treated to be a fundamental right, like a right to breathe, to eat, to drink, to blink, etc. Sounds like Ed Fry, the attorney. Said the judge, while slamming the Delhi police for using unwarranted force on the sleeping crowd, thereby breaching fundamental right to privacy. But no citizen could claim sleeping to be his fundamental right. Undoubtedly, reasonable regulation of time, place, and manner of the act of sleeping would not violate any constitutional guarantee, for the reason that a person may not claim that sleeping is his fundamental right, and therefore he has a right to sleep in the premises of the Supreme Court itself, not in my backyard, or within the precincts of Parliament, Justice Chauhan said. But he said sleeping for a human being was a basic necessity and not a luxury. If this sleep is disturbed, the mind gets disoriented and it disrupts the health cycle. If this disruption is brought about in odd hours, preventing an individual from getting normal sleep, it also causes energy misbalance, indigestion, and also affects cardiovascular health, the judge said. Sleep is therefore is a self-rejuvenating element of our life cycle and is therefore part and parcel of human life. The disruption of sleep is to deprive a person of a basic priority, resulting in adverse metabolic effects, he said. To arouse a person suddenly brings about a feeling of shock and numbness. The pressure of such a sudden awakening results in almost a void of sensation. Such an action therefore does affect the basic life of an individual, Justice Chauhan said. Rejecting the justification given by the police that the crowd was planning to disrupt peace, the judge said, to presume that a person was scheming to disrupt public peace while asleep would be unjust and would be entering into the dreams of that person. Reminding me of the button that we created back in 1988, end the sleeping ban, free our dreams. Quoting a U.S. court judgment, Justice Chauhan said, the citizens' persons have a right to leisure, to sleep, not to hear and to remain silent. The knock at the door, whether by day or by night, as a prelude to a search without authority of law, amounts to be police intrusion into privacy and violation of a fundamental right of a citizen. He said, because of this, many countries have clamped complete night curfews at airports, that is, a ban on landing and takeoff in the late night hours, for the reason that the concept of sound sleep has been associated with sound health, which is an inseparable facet of Article 21, the right to life of an Indian constitution. It's interesting, of course, this is not the right to sleep of homeless people. This is the right to sleep, sounds like, of a group of people who are part of a study group or who are lodging with this particular yoga master, whatever he's doing. But still, it's pretty significant. It's different than the right of homeless people to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. I don't even know if that's come up in India, because based upon my ignorant preliminary knowledge of India, just my passing knowledge, is just so prevalent. People sleep where they can. There's also a second decision in the United States in Daytona Beach, which I think is, isn't that Florida? Daytona Beach. Sleeping on benches, along sidewalks, and in alleys is no longer against the law in the city, a judge has ruled. County Judge Bell Schumann dismissed 11 Daytona Beach cases of sleeping in public and referred to another 29 similar cases that soon could be dropped. The judge said the city ordinance has been enforced one way or another for at least 40 years is unconstitutional. Arresting people for sleeping in a public place, the judge said, is beyond the purview of the city's police powers. In a civilized society, it is not a crime to be unemployed, without funds, without shelter, in a public place, Schumann wrote in a 15-page order, which was made public on Monday. People with nowhere to sleep are not criminals merely because they sleep in a public place. Someone should introduce this guy to the local judges. The decision was hailed as a victory by homeless advocates who are still reeling from a local law passed late last year that outlaws begging for food downtown. Think Keith McHenry, an activist who will be coming to Santa Cruz between March 23rd and March 27th. If you'd like to be a part of the McHenry preparations for that, by the way, give a call to the Huff line, 423-4833. Keith McHenry was talking about this issue. He's the co-founder of Food Not Bombs on the radio. Hear about how these a number of Florida cities are cracking down with the anti-feeding laws. This is monumental, Troy Ray, executive director of Halifax Urban Ministry, said Monday. This ruling, ending the sleeping ban, affords a degree of humanity back to homeless people. This is life-changing for homeless people in Daytona Beach. I'm skeptical. I think the police will find other means to go after people, but let's hope it certainly puts a damper on some of them. There is likely to be opposition to the ruling. The story from the Daytona Beach News Journal continues. The downtown area, where panhandling was recently banned, Santa Cruz is everywhere, has a high concentration of retail business, restaurants, and homeless people. At City Commission meetings, voices have been heard from conflicting points of interest. Some have spoken about the need for compassion, while others say tough laws are needed to help the business community. The city's leadership isn't about to give up on enforcement of, quote, quality of life-related laws. What that means is depth of repression is really the what quality of life means is. Kick out the homeless is what quality of life means. It's really a nasty label, a deceptive sort of sugar coating for a toxic kind of thing, a poisonous thing. The city police will not enforce the sleeping law under Schuman's ruling, Police Chief Mike Ritwood said, but they will take notice of people sleeping outdoors. There are other tools in the toolbox, Chitwood said. If someone is sleeping on a bench, we can investigate. But apparently, unlike in Santa Cruz, they can't arrest you and throw you into jail for a month and a half, as they have Gary Johnson. People still can be arrested for trespassing on private property or in public parks after hours, and that actually, full disclosure, might be the next level that they would use to go after Occupy Santa Cruz, and indeed after Gary Johnson, claiming that, oh, it's not that he's sleeping, it's he's in the, quote, park, which we suddenly created, they've suddenly created by fiat, and then put up no entrance from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. City officials, including Chitwood, said they were reviewing the city ordinance for possible updates. The city's legal department, Chitwood said, was already looking at similar ordinances in other cities before the judge's order. The judge made a ruling, and we'll respect the ruling, Chitwood said. It's up to the legal eagles to decide how to address the law, and we'll enforce it from here. The ruling was a result of a case that the city brought against a homeless man, William Bradford Carter, 44, who was arrested at 12:49 a.m. August 22nd. According to a police report, Carter was observed sleeping on a bus stop bench in the 100 block of North Ridgewood Avenue. City Ordinance 8632 is called the Sleeping Ordinance and has been virtually untouched since the 1970s. City code makes it a second-degree misdemeanor, punishable by up to 60 days in jail or a fine of $500 for anyone who is sleeping outdoors in public between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. D.A. Bob Lee has outdone that city of Daytona Beach by arresting Gary Johnson and charging him with four counts of 647E, which is punishable by, I think it's either 1 year or 2 years in jail and a $1,000 or $2,000 fine. The law was made worse last year thanks to a vote by the state legislature, including the much beloved Bill Monig, as I understand it. The city's sleeping ban, however, is still an infraction. You can't get jail, and you're supposed to have only 8 hours of community service at a maximum. But again, the fines have gone up, and the judges are ignoring the community service, the law. They're ignoring the law. At least Commissioner Baskett has been, which is a... I guess it's not unusual for her, actually, but it's an example of the corruption of the courts where homeless people are concerned. The city also has a camping law that regulates how and where people can sleep beneath the stars. This is Daytona Beach, Ken. City officials contend the sleeping ordinance was enacted to promote the goals of safety and sanitation and to improve aesthetics. While Schuman agreed that these reasons were valid governmental purposes, she, that's the judge, agreed with the defendants that the ordinance was far too broad. The ordinance criminalizes essentially innocent conduct with every member of the animal kingdom must do every day. Sleep, the judge said. According to recent statistics, there are 2,200 homeless people in Volusia County and 768 shelter beds. Ray, whose agency provides assistance for the homeless in Daytona Beach, said the group feeds 400 people a day and provides about 7,000 showers a month. An arrest for sleeping in public can be devastating, especially given the fine of $500. Many times people who get arrested for sleeping on benches lose what few belongings they have in the process. The law took so long to be challenged because many people are not affected by homelessness. Grandpa can fall asleep in a park, and no one is going to arrest Grandpa. But for the homeless, sooner or later, they get a sleeping ticket. And the situation here is interesting. Their sleeping ban is even less restrictive than ours, 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. Ours is 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. So we have a worse law than theirs, but we still have judges that uphold it locally, as Scott Graham has pointed out. Well, we're kind of reaching the end of the rope here, or the end of the road, hopefully not the end of the rope, for this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I think I'll put on a little music. Coming into the studio shortly should be the erstwhile Uncle Dennis, who's going to take over. And I guess he's going to be gone for a while, but he does have a show coming up tonight, if he makes it in, which I suspect he will. And I will be back on Sunday, 9:30 in the morning. So you can reach me between times at 423-4833. I'll be talking about the banning for life of Quentin Cornus from the farmer's market yesterday for petitioning, getting ahead with voter petitions. I'm going to be talking about, I'll be playing probably something from Don Lane's homelessness class involving Steve Plage versus Sergeant Eric Seeley. I'll be going playing a lot of interviews from the past that I've had to skip. And who knows, maybe I'll have some special mystery guests. So stay with me on that day, and we will proceed. Let's hear a little Malvina Reynolds. The faucets are dripping.
The faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping, and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. You can't ask the landlord to put in the washer. He'd rather you'd move than to put in the washer. The faucets are dripping, they sound in my ears. The tap in the bathroom's been running for years. The faucets are dripping with old New York City. The faucets are dripping, and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. There's a wild streak of green in the sink in the kitchen. It comes from the rill trickling out of the plumbing. The streams from the mountains, the pools from the lea, all run from my faucet and down to the sea. The faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping, and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. You can't ask the landlord to put in the washer. You can't ask the landlord to mend the old stairs. He takes in the rents and he lives in Miami, where faucets don't drip and there's sun everywhere. The faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping, and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. The faucets are dripping, the landlord's content. With every new tenant, he raises the rent. The buildings can crumble, the tenants can cry. There's a shortage of housing, you'll live there or die. The faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping, and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. They're building some buildings and fine city centers. It's sure working hell with the low-income renters. They're jammed into rooms with the rat and the fly, where the faucets all drip and the floors never dry. The faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping, and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip into you.
Up from El Centro and San Bernardino, Baker's few Fresno, Madera, Merced, Salinas, and Stockton.